Well, good morning, brothers, sisters, and young people, and a warm welcome to those listening in online. Hope you're all faring quite well this morning, and welcome to our meeting here. I am Brother Daniel Tierley, and I'll be your chairman for this morning. I'm joined on the platform today by our brother Jesse Ryan, who will be giving us the words of exhortation. Our brother Jesse has asked that we read from Revelation chapter 7. And I'll now ask our brother Jesse to come and give us the words of exhortation.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all here this morning. We're going to, I guess, try and build a little bit of a vision out of Revelation, I'm hoping. I don't sort of claim to be an expert on Revelation. It's sometimes overwhelming to open it up and look at it, but I was motivated to do it because, in April last year, we went to Rathmines Bible School, and the youth, at one point sang a song, and I was listening to it, and it was Alethea Burney, I think, wrote it, "Salvation Belongs to Our God," and I would encourage everyone on their way home, I might be able to get the link or something, to listen to it, because every time I do, it kind of nearly makes me cry because of the vision that it builds. Anyway, I was standing there watching these young people, which isn't really that far from my own self, and they were singing about salvation and the blood of the Lamb. And that vision that started to be created through this praise was incredible because they're so enthusiastic. And I thought, like, I wanted to find out more about the song and looked into it a little bit and realised that it comes literally straight from Revelation 7 that we read this morning. But as I was looking at these young people, and the first thing I thought is, the world is their oyster, you could say. And here they are, and they're singing praise to God from Revelation. And whether or not they all knew it or not didn't really matter. It was just an incredible moment to witness it. But having sort of thought about it a little more, and I thought, you know, I look around, and I think if we're honest with ourselves, we see all this enjoyment, all this fulfillment, and the apparent contentment that is on offer for us. There's so much we could gain from this life. And really, I would think, and I speak particularly, I guess, in regards to our situation in Australia. We have such a high standard of living, the least poverty, and I guess it could extend worldwide. You know, there's a lot of countries which have these high standards. Great literacy, low child mortality, good health, freedom and democracy. And you would often sort of get the message that we're really improving as humans and there's so much we can gain and take from this life. And I think as believers, and I know for myself, this can have an effect on how I view what I can get out of life, even though, you know, it's deeply part of my life to be a believer. I think the effect that what happens around us is a lot more than probably what I would give it credit. But having sort of thought through that, I found a quote in Job. And Job, obviously, he experienced some incredible amounts of suffering. And yet he looked around, and you can turn there if you like, but it's in Job 21 verse 7, and I'll read it for you. An interesting perspective. He said, why do the wicked live on, growing old and increasing in power? They see their children established around them, their offspring before their eyes. Their homes are safe and free from fear. The rod of God is not on them. Their bulls never fail to breed. Their cows calve and do not miscarry. They send forth their children as a flock. Their little ones dance about. They sing to the music of timbrel and lyre. They make merry to the sound of the pipe. and they spend their years in prosperity, and they go down to the grave in peace, and they say to God, "Leave us alone. We have no desire to know your ways. Who is the Almighty that we should serve him, and what should we gain from praying to him?" I think as a believer, and I'd speak for myself, I would have had that moment to some extent where I've looked around and thought, there's a lot of people who seem like they're getting a lot out of this life. They don't particularly have to self-evaluate. They don't have to think too deeply about their actions. And at times it almost seems like, gee, that would be nice to just go and to spend time in prosperity, and perhaps turn and say to God, "You know what, I'm okay, just leave me alone." We might even think, what should I gain from praying to him? That requires a level of faith or trust, and to be honest, it's just going to cause me more problems than I want. But then I thought, well, okay, so we've got to work out, because the theme or the word that I'm wanting to think about this morning is salvation. And that's really what that Revelation 7, for me, it builds this picture of salvation. And I think Revelation is overwhelming, but when I've briefly sort of read through it and you allow the story and the vision of what the kingdom age and the birth of Christ and the work that he would carry out to sort of be the surface level of how we read it, to me, it's one of the most inspiring places to go to get a vision and to come to an understanding of the extent that God's gone to achieve salvation for us. But considering, I guess, the context of it doesn't seem like anyone needs salvation, we have to ask ourselves, what do you need salvation from? And I think a common answer, and even as believers, a common answer might be death. Like, I don't want to die, so I want to be saved. And I know probably it's just the honest first response that we would have, like, no one wants to die. And if we're thinking about it, you know, death is unsettling to everyone. It's not a nice thing. So why then, when I'm looking around and I'm meeting people who are all subject to mortality, why aren't they being drawn to salvation? Why aren't they being drawn near to God or looking for something that would give them a sense of peace? Because the response that I would get more often than not is, you know, just live life to the fullest and don't really think too much about that. I'm going to seize the day, and there's a lot of opportunity and there's so much that I can have. And really, like, that's only something that should happen in my old age, and I'll deal with that when I get there. And you know what? I think I've seen even tragedies take place within, outside of Christadelphians. And sometimes it just staggers me the way that they deal with it. You're going like, they kind of go like, "What a great life. We'll just remember all the good things." And I understand that it's a coping mechanism because they don't want to have to deal with the brutal reality that's in front of all of us. But I think what we're living in is a society which don't really want to need to be saved from anything, so they ignore that. And they ignore the event or the instance of death. And I mean to highlight the instance or the event of death. It's seen as something that's just, oh, that'll happen, but we'll think about that when it happens. And, well, if it happens to me, I'm not going to think about anything really, are you? So. But what I'm trying to say is it kind of makes me sort of unsettled the way that they seem to just move on past it. And then I think as a result of that, as taking everything we can from this life, well, we don't really need to be saved from anything because the perspective of what's going to happen to us is so deceitful. And we think that maybe the thing we're needing to be saved on is the event or the instance of death, when in fact, I don't think the Bible particularly teaches us that what you need to, you know, desire salvation for is the event or the instance of death. Because I think we can just justify too easily, it's something that'll happen later on and we'll just deal with that when we get there. Now, I think I'm speaking a little bit generally here. I'm aware as individuals we all have different experiences with mortality. But I know for my own self, I look at my life and the opportunities that I could have to just live and just fulfill my life with whatever I desire, because I've never really been particularly challenged with really obvious trial and tribulation. But I know there are people who have, so I guess I am speaking in a general sense. I think the truth is that humanity's need for salvation goes further than the event or the instance of death, and the Bible teaches that. And I want us to remember that this morning. We need to remind ourselves what we're actually being saved from, or what salvation really is. And if we were to think back to the very beginning, God told Adam, "The day that thou eat, thou shalt surely die." And you think, well, Adam and Eve didn't just got dead and the day that they ate of the fruit of the tree of knowledge and good and evil, it wasn't the event or the instance of death that happened at that point. The idea of God telling them that you will die, and dying you will die. So our mortality takes on this, I guess, ongoing existence. You know, we know from birth, we're born dying and mortal creatures. Romans 5, and you can turn there if you want, but I guess briefly just pull out some of the verses which I guess explain that a little further. Romans 5, it says in verse 12, "Sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin. And in this way death came to all people because all sinned." In verse 16 it says, "Judgment followed one sin and brought condemnation." In verse 17 it says, "By the trespass of one man, death reigned through that one man." In verse 18 it says, "One trespass resulted in condemnation for all people." And in summary, in verse 21, it says, "Sin reigned in death." You see, sin took over. Sin and death took over God's creation, something which was good. Sin and death takes over God's creation, and as a result of that, the process of dying comes about. Not just the event and not just the instance of death, the process of dying. And so then, if we think about this life, we know that this life, which is before us from birth, and which the world puts out there as at a new birth, here's all the opportunity to go and make something of yourself. We know from what the Bible teaches that there has to be something more than this life and the carnal inclination to just go and live and be as present as you possibly can, ignore the Creator, take what you can. We know, though, that this life does not glorify God. And it makes sense. Dying doesn't glorify the Creator. If I create something and it's faulty and it's not working properly, it's not doing the things that I want it to do, it doesn't give me any sense of achievement or happiness or contentment. It doesn't give glory to me. It doesn't give anything back. It's failing. But I think it's easy for us to forget, in the society that we're in, I think it's easy to forget that this life, all that we might think is on offer, isn't what we are intended for. And although there are many around us who are content in this state, and at times, even myself, I think I'm probably content in this state, and I can kind of just believe in God a little bit, but gee, it's a little bit hard sometimes, and sometimes my doubt overcomes me a bit, and you know what, I'll kind of just not pray to God for a little bit, but I'll keep it in my back pocket because death's a bit scary. You know what, how much is our knowledge of the truth driving us to change right now in the life that we currently have? Because God has a greater purpose than just us living and dying. It's not the intention of the Creator for us to be in the realm we're currently in. And like, I mean, realm, it's probably a favourite word of mine because it kind of takes you into like a, what are those books that, like a fantasy book? It just sounds like there's going to be elves and witches and magic or something, which I actually secretly am a massive fan of that type of book. That's why I've grown this giant beard. You know, like, it's not the intention of the Creator, God, for us to be in the realm we're currently in. That is how we exist. Romans 8, just flick over if you were in Romans 5, kind of expands on that thought, and it actually says it. I think it's verse 7. I kind of paraphrased a few of the verses. The verse says, those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires. It says, the mind governed by the flesh is death. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Verse 8, and this is from the ESV, those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God. So I'm hoping this morning if we feel comfortable perhaps, and we might not really be taking salvation that seriously, we might be influenced a little bit by what's going on around us. We need to remember what we're dealing with. A master of deception. And I think we're in a time and a place where this life and the nature that we bear, the serpent thinking, is at its most deceptive. So let's not be deceived. Just want to come back to Revelation that we read, because there's a few points in it that I just thought are interesting. And like I said, I would love to spend a lot of time looking at Revelation, because the more that I read it and whatnot, it just seems to be pretty incredible. But I know there's so many different perspectives and levels that you can go through with it. But I just want to, like I said, try and take from it some of these little snippets, I guess, of very surface level stuff, which help us to kind of come to this realization that salvation is an ongoing realm. It's something that we live in. It's not something that is just a future event like death. Like, you know, to counter the event or the instance of dying, we need the event or the instance of salvation. I think there's a lot of religions who try to deal with the event of death, and they might say, well, the immortality of the soul or something. I think the Christadelphians and the Bible truth teaches that there is much more going on in this process of creation, even from the very beginning or from the birth of a newborn, even in the grave. The Bible talks about those who are asleep. So it's breaking this concept of dying, and it gives the idea that God is intending to continue and to come further with his work and with his creation. And at this point in time, I think it's very obvious that it's not quite finished yet, although a lot of work has been done. But Revelation 7, it talked about those who are in white robes, having come from great tribulation. And like I said, there's probably all sorts of specific times and maybe a particular tribulation that this might be referencing, but let's think of it like this. Those who come or who have come from a time where sin reigned in death. Because regardless of the tribulation or the tribulations that different believers have faced or experienced and been exposed to throughout all of time, every single one of them, including us, are subject to the tribulation of the realm of this life. That is being born into the dying thou shalt die existence. And yet God offers so much more in a simple way. And so the question is, I guess, can this life, which we're born into, really even be called life? Just turn back to Revelation 5. Does anyone else have a bad binding in Revelation? Must be because it's right at the back. Revelation 5. John wept over this. In verse 4, let's read from verse 3. No man in heaven nor in earth, neither under the earth, was able to open the book, neither to look thereon. And I wept much, because no man was found worthy to open and to read the book, neither to look thereon. You know, Jesus wept, and he wept at Lazarus' tomb. And I think he wasn't weeping over the event. He knew that he could do something about that, the instance of this death. He wept because of the mortality of the human race and because of sin. He wept because of the situation that all men find themselves in from birth. And as John's looking around and he's looking for a solution, he wept much for this same reason. And so when we look around, are we moved by that state we find ourselves in of sin and death from birth? When we speak to people, is that what we're telling them? Like, it's not just the end of your life that we're here to tell you a truth about, even though that is part of our hope. But from being born, there needs to be teaching and us shining a light on the need for something about how we exist to change. And so I think salvation then kind of becomes this realm that is current and it exists now. And when we believe in God's work of salvation, we actually start to live in that realm. Revelation 5. The question is asked, who will save humanity from dying thou shalt die? Just look at verse 9. And they sung a new song. This is why this song was so incredible to witness at Bible school. They were literally singing these words. Thou art worthy to take the book, to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain, and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. You see, Jesus overcame the event of death by living his whole life outside of that realm of sin and death. And as a result of that, it kind of undid what was this natural process of living, dying, and being in the grave. We're told the grave couldn't hold him. It's like it's been undone, all of this natural process of occurrence. Jesus overcame by living like us and yet being without sin. And in his death, though, we know he showed the true depth of the problem that we inherited through Adam. And yet through his obedience and his willingness to die on the cross, he has achieved a victory. And there's been a triumph. You know, we can look back and read about the gospel of Christ and realize there has been a triumph. Christ has won a great victory. And then from there, we can begin to live in salvation through the faith in that having occurred. And not only that, it's not only just presently. The Bible teaches that there's going to be more, because this revelation in particular, it talks about in Revelation chapter 2, verse 26, it says, "He that overcomes and keeps my works unto the end, which we know Jesus did, to him will I give power over the nations." And I look at that and I think that that's something that I know is in context of yet to come. When we read that Christ will return to the earth, I know that God will give him power over the nations. Revelation, again, it even speaks of a woman who would give birth to a son. In Revelation 12, she gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule the nations with an iron scepter. And so you can then kind of go back and, I guess, look at the story of Jesus and the Gospels, realize this is what we're being told has been done and what has been achieved. And obviously, Paul's letters then confirm all of those things that were witnessed. The Acts of the Apostles, they confirm these things. That already leaves us in an incredible place. We can then look to the future knowing that there is more to come. So the blood of the Lamb has brought victory for himself and for us, because in Revelation 3, verse 22, Jesus himself says, "To the one who is victorious, I'll give them the right to sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat down with my Father in his throne." Like, do we believe that Christ ascended and sits with the Father? Because if we do, there is an incredible thing on offer that Jesus is telling us. "I'll give you the right to sit with me on my throne." There's not many kings or leaders who would have such far-reaching power, divine authority even, who would even think about giving us that opportunity. But then I guess it raised the question, well, but how can I be victorious? Quite a grand word, I guess, but well, we know, like we spoke about at the start, this life cannot please God. So what pleases God? And it's so simple. Like, if you're a young person who's, you know, struggling as to what you need to do, I just say, just believe the things that you know. Because without faith, it is impossible to please him. He who comes to God must believe that he is. Sorry. You know, it's quite simple and yet hard. But I think having seen this young group singing, and I thought, man, how many of those young people are going to just get sucked into what they see around them? So the encouragement is, hold on to your faith. I just want to finish in Ephesians, finish in Revelation, but just turn back to Ephesians chapter 2. Because this kind of ties so much of it together. Ephesians 2 says, "As for you, you were dead in transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world and the ruler of the kingdom of the air, the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient. All of us also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. Like the rest, we were by nature deserving of wrath. But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, has made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you've been saved. And God raised us up with Christ and seated us with him in the heavenly realms in Christ Jesus. You know, salvation is just out of this world. It's as simple as that. Without a doubt, we of course long for a future salvation. But the salvation that we can experience now, knowing these things, knowing that God, through his great love, who is rich in mercy, has made us alive with Christ and offers us to sit on his throne with him. Of course, that promise of Jesus ruling with an iron scepter is yet to take place, and that is our hope. And we know God has an appointed day. Jesus will return and he'll take up his bride. So in conclusion, let's just finish in Revelation and leave ourselves with that vision as we come and we remember how this has all been brought about, the man who has achieved a victory for us. Revelation 21 says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away. There was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people. He will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death. There will be no more mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.'" You know, salvation is a guaranteed future that we can start living in now. And this morning we're coming here and we're remembering through the emblems a man who has made all this possible. We remember Jesus this morning and we come to strengthen each other's faith and to encourage one another.